I said no, but we should do it Motzei Shabbos, just to remind them.
Okay, we never discussed the sensory crossover that there happened at Ma'amad Har Sinai. Did we ever discuss that? You know, that Chazal tell us, because it's openly alluded to the Pasuk, Chom Roy Mesakolos, they saw the sounds. So Rashi tells us that they're able to see sound, and they're able to hear sight. We never discussed this, did we? Okay, so now according to who doesn't do a miracle in vain, there must be a message in that there was a sensory crossover by Ma'amad Har Sinai. Like we said, they could see sound and they could hear sight. And we have to understand what the message is in that, why that was, why was that necessary? What was the point in that? Makes you wonder what was in the mun, right? So, and the truth is, the depth of this discussion will lead us into the question that should bother any person who is Torah observant: why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us two Torahs? He gave us a Torah Shebichsav and a Torah Shebaal Peh. Why couldn't it either be all written or all oral? Why was there this schism? That the Torah breaks up into splinters. It's one Torah that splinters into two, the Bechtav and the Baal Peh. And this is actually, apropos, the Sforim point out that this is the mazel of the month, this month where Sivan, right, that we got the Torah. What's the mazel of the month? Taomin. I don't know how you say that in Latin. What's the zodiac term? Not that I care. Jam, is that what it is? All right, twins. Yeah, sir. Yeah. Because there's a twinship in our Torah. It's Bechtav and Baal Peh. Right. That's a sign that to look into, and with this, maybe, it's Chag Matan Torsenu, so it's about time we got straight. What is the function of the written Torah? What is the function of the oral Torah? How they're different and how they complement. Right. And, the written Torah is, it's written, you observe it with, you read it, you see it, right? The oral Torah, you hear it. One is seeing, the other one is hearing. So let's talk about seeing versus hearing. These are the two senses we use to gather information. You know something either because you saw it, or you know something because you heard about it. Right? So let's talk about this. So now let's first get into this by discussing it in the negative. The Summa versus the Cheresh, the blind man versus the deaf man. That in Halacha, we find that Chazal write about a Summa that is Choshev Kames, he's considered to be like dead in his own lifetime. However, this comes up in a few places. Right? However, even though that is the case, the way we paskin is that he is considered to be a bardat, mentally competent, fully mentally competent. The Summa can be motziyu, in Kiddush, or, is fully mentally competent. He's responsible for his actions. Considered like that, but fully, fully culpable for whatever he does. Right? By the Cheresh, right, the deaf man, it's the opposite. No such chazal that a deaf man is considered to be dead in his own lifetime. However, in chazal's view, again, is I'm not paskling halacha lemaaseh because we've made tremendous breakthroughs in the education of the deaf. But in the days of chazal, the deaf man was not considered educatable, and he had a din of a shota. Right? Of course, we're talking about a person who was deaf from birth, who never heard in his life. Someone deaf from birth, this is the famous chashu that you find in Gemara, Rosh HaTeles, Cheresh, Shoita, V'Katan. These are the three people that are considered mentally incompetent and not responsible for their actions. The deaf man, the insane, and of course the minor, who was under the age of a bar or bat mitzvah. All right, so what is it about the blind man is like dead, but fully mentally competent. The deaf man is considered fully alive, but mentally incompetent. You know, what is the difference, you know, between the you know, the information that you're that's barred from you because you can't see it versus the information that's barred from you because you can't hear it? Right. So the question is, you know, what do we know from the sense of sight, and what do we know from the sense of hearing? What type of information? So let's break it down, because this is very, very important. Right. Well, the main advantage of seeing over hearing, as they say, seeing is believing. Right. There's nothing more objective than having seen something, you know, then you know it for a fact. When bearing testimony, edus, when edim, you know, give their testimony, you know, we don't care what they heard. We only care what they saw. And we ask them to, you know, eliminate from their description any type of interpretation of the evidence. Just tell us what you saw. And that's the halacha. You know, the edim have to strictly speak about what they saw. Like, let's say, for case in point, you know, just as an example, right? If you know, the edim see two people go into a room, right, and the door is shut, then they hear a gun go off, right, and then they go in the room afterwards and they see one guy holding the smoking gun, the other guy is dead. You cannot convict them on that testimony on murder. You can't, right? Because they didn't actually see it. Hey, this is tremendous circumstantial evidence. It makes no difference, even though they heard a gunshot. But, you know, we are concerned purely what they saw. And, you know, it depends on how exacting, you know, the cross-examination in the Beis Din is. Rabbi Akiva said that if he would have been, you know, Rabbi Akiva lived, you know, he was alive while the Beis Mishnah was still standing, but he became Rabbi Akiva after Churban HaBayis. You know, and he says, if I would have been sitting in the Sanhedrin, you know, no one would have ever been killed ever. Because I would have asked him, did you actually see? Perhaps he already was wounded in the exact place where the sword penetrated. I would stop there. Did you actually really see that the body was complete? Right? And, you know, Shema B'makom Nekev, you know, a place where he already had a hole in his body. Maybe that's exactly where the sword went in. Right, a place where he was already, yeah. You know, he would have, you know, whittled it down to, did you actually see a murder? You know, no, the halacha doesn't, demand this of, you know, in this type of level, but he says, if you, once you stump them up and say, did you actually see, and they answer, no, I did not see that, you know, that's it. It's not called a complete testimony. So I would have, like, whittled it down to, did you actually see that he wasn't wounded already exactly where the sword went in? But that's what we care about in testimony. We only care what was seen. No, we don't care about circumstances. We don't care how the mind puts the pieces together. You know, what's reasonable. No, what did you actually see? That's all we want to know. Yes. Mrs. Wing, you want to? Right? Okay, I'm sorry. You understand that the the most objective sense that we have is seeing. There's nothing more objective than that. And, you know, what we observe with our eyes is considered to be incontrovertible fact. And that's why, you know, scientific theories that held for like thousands of years, over 1,000 years, like Aristotle, you know, people didn't question Aristotle's physics for 1,500 years until, you know, Galileo and others started actually observing that it's not that way. His explanations were very reasonable. But the reason why I rejected it, you know, is we observed otherwise. And then you have to come up with a new explanation because we just see it's not that way. Right? But that's the advantage of sight. Right? What's the disadvantage? Right, this is it's very raw data with no explanation. It's just a raw fact. Just like very, very, you know, very parallel to how the parallel to the physical reality, that sight only sees the surface. It's also that way philosophically. There's no depth in sight. You just see, you know, the raw fact, right? Any type of explanation of why it is that way, that the mind does. The mind makes that up, right? Let's put it this way. Your sense of sight sees what? It doesn't see why.
You know, I was on a case in a jury, and there was a testimony of that this older woman who saw from her window two teenage boys knocking down this taxi driver and taking his money, and it didn't hold. First of all, she was old, and they were saying, the prosecutor, that her mind was not that clear and that she might have misinterpreted. Then they said, what kind of eyesight do you have? And she wore glasses, and she was not wearing her glasses at the time she saw the incident. So those two things discounted her seeing, and she was not a good witness. So
right. Sight
depends also on how the mind perceives it, and also
yeah. The
physical ability.
Well, the physical ability to see. You know, in a sense, they're saying she didn't really see it, right? That's in effect what they were saying. You didn't really see it. You think you saw it, right? But when you see a raw fact, right? You know, the eyes don't see the scientific explanation. You just see the raw fact. That's what I see. Just like it only apprehends the surface, it's also the way it is philosophically. It doesn't see why. It just sees what. Why belongs to the realm of explanation, right? And that's a mental activity. You know, the mind now tries to link it, you know, link together cause and effect, right? Yeah. The eye may be able to see something very raw, like a very raw physical cause and effect, like someone punching someone else, right? But you know, anything that already is, you know, less visible than that, the cause and effect, you know, it's like the mind is trying to piece the pieces together, right? So the truth is, you know, in most stories, you know, that, you know, even story that you witness, right, the way it works is that the eye see a scene, another scene, and then, you know, your mind starts putting it together that this must be, you know, why. And that's why it's very important to be dan lekaf schus. Things, you know, are not, you know, as most people would interpret them, you know, and that's very important to judge someone favorably, because the eyes don't see the whole picture; you just see stills, right? A bunch of stills that you group together, and you could have easily grouped those that data together in a more favorable light. It's all in the mind how you put those sights together in a story. You know, in a framework of cause and effect, and that's why we're warned, you know, you're doing, this is all in your mind. So therefore, be dan lekaf schus. Once you're putting it all together, you might as well put it together favorably. Right. So as objective as sight is, right, it doesn't get to the why. It doesn't see the cause and effect. That's all mental. That all belongs to the realm of the mind. Right. But it goes more than that. The eyesight can't even see ideas. So now we're just talking about how you like superimpose ideas on things that you see. Right? Ideas themselves are totally invisible. Right? Ideas are all in the mind. So now if you break it down, all the ideas that you know, you heard. You never saw ideas. Mm-hmm. Right? You never saw ideas. You might say, but I read them in a book. Okay, you know, a book also captures sound bites, you know, because we're writing with a phonetic, we have a phonetic alphabet, so you're really hearing it, you know, by reading it, you know, but, you know, it's being put into words. Right? Actual ideas are invisible. Ideas, values, they're all invisible. Right? The eyes only see very raw physical data. Right? So the difference between right and wrong, you can't see that in a microscope. You can't see that in a telescope. Those are ideas. Those values are taught to you. They are ideas you know, they're in the mind and heart of whoever is carrying these ideas, whether he's transmitting what it says in the Torah or whether he made them up, and how does he get them to you? He puts it into words and you absorb it through your ears. We get ideas through our ears. We get raw facts through our eyes. It's the difference between demonstration and explanation. I could visually demonstrate something, but the explanation, that's all oral. And that's to say every time you go to a seminar, so you think about what's on the what they're putting on the whiteboard, what they're showing on the graphs, and what he's saying, right? What they'll show you visually display is very raw facts. And then, of course, he puts his baloney on it, and it works because you buy my product, and that's how it works, right? And then this is why it works, and this is how it'll work for you. That's all, his explanation. That's the difference between explanation versus demonstration. So here is the amazing thing, going back to understand what Chazal say about the blind man versus the deaf man, right? Seeing is the most objective connection to reality. Not a coincidence, first thing God created was light. Set the whole tone for what reality is about. The most objective connection to reality is sight. Seeing is believing, that's called objective fact, right? But, seeing only sees raw data. So let's back up. So Suma Choshev Kames, he's out of reality, because the most objective connection to reality is the sense of sight. So he who is blind is like dead. He's sealed off from reality. There's no, like we said, there's nothing more realistic measure of life around you than seeing. Right? But he could still hear, and he could therefore get ideas, because he could still hear. Now here's the thing. The difference between right and wrong is all ideas. The difference between right and wrong, morality, ethics, is all in the realm of ideas. You won't see morality or ethics in a telescope or in a microscope. It's invisible. These are ideas. These are values. Right? The cheresh, right, who could very well see, so he's not considered dead, he's connected, right, but he can't hear, you can't hold him responsible for his actions. He doesn't know the difference between right and wrong, because right and wrong are ideas. And there's no way to get those ideas into him, because ideas are invisible. They're put into words, and you absorb it through hearing. He can't absorb ideas. He can't absorb the difference between right and wrong. And that's why he is not responsible for his actions. All right, now, again, we're not talking halacha maaseh, because the poskim, in our day and age, we give the chereshim of our generation double whammy. We're machmir both ways. Because they're educatable, which wasn't possible in Chazal.
You can transmit ideas.
Yes. No. So we have a serious dilemma in a good way, a serious dilemma. I think most of machmir to give them double whammy. Machmir to give them the din of a baradas, also machmir to give them the din of a lav baradas. Vis-a-vis being motzi someone else in a mitzvah or something that we. It's always talking also that a person who never heard in his life. I mean, Chazal say a person who was, hearing and then he was already educated. So he was already educated, right? So Chazal talking about someone who never was able to hear ever a day in his life. So I say, Anwar, and we've had Baruch Hashem breakthroughs in the education of the deaf. So the halacha is more complex, not cut and dry like it was in days of Chazal for good reasons. Whatever, so you have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi as to what to do in any given situation. Right, but this is what classically, because they can't, the difference between right and wrong is what makes a person responsible for their actions. You can't get that into their head because they can't hear. Because the difference between right and wrong is not dry, hard fact. It's ideas. All right, so you might be able to teach a cheresh a trade, like to be a carpenter or to be a mechanic, because you could show him. Right, but the difference between right and wrong, you can't get into him, because that's purely ideas. It's not something to show. Right. So now this is the function of our Torah Shebichsav as opposed to our Torah Shebaal Peh, to understand the roles of our two Torahs, which are all one Torah, but it fissioned fissioned when it reached us, as we're going to explain. It fissioned when it reached us because by us, our eyes are not our ears, and our ears are not our eyes. In heaven, it's all one Torah. In heaven, Bechtav and Baal Peh is all one. Right? And we're going to explain this. I'll explain, therefore, what the vision was that they were able to see sound. We'll get to that in a second. Right, but you know that, of course, it's all one Torah, but it has to fission into two different Torahs, not two different, but, two aspects, because that's to be congruent to the human situation, because our eyes do what our eyes do and don't do what our ears do, and our ears do what our ears do and don't do what our eyes do. So parallel to that, the Torah fissioned, right, because of the human situation, into a Torah Shebechtav and a Torah Shebaal Peh. Right? And we'll discuss now, what do we learn from Torah Shebechtav and what do we learn from Torah Shebaal Peh? Right? First of all, what qualifies to make it into the Torah Shebechtav? It didn't fully end with the Chumash. There was Sefer Yoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, Malachim. Tanakh kept on expanding until the dawn of the second temple period with Chag Yisrael and Malachi. They were the last of the Nevi'im. So I ask you a question, what makes it into the Bible? What stays, what Divrei Torah don't make it into the Bible and stay a part of Torah Shebaal Peh? Nevuah. All right, so first and foremost. What?
Ketuvim's not really part of it, I'm saying.
What?
It's not going to be considered a part of it.
Well, Ketuvim is not on the same level as Nevuah, but it's still in a similar sense, as we're going to explain. Right? The things that are done b'Nevuah or Ketuvim is on a lower level, Ruach HaKodesh, that's what makes it into the Bible. The Navi sees. Right? Right, the Navi sees. So just like he saw it, he knows it's true because he saw it. With the power of prophecy, he saw it. Right, spiritual seeing. Just like he saw it, so also it becomes part of the Torah Shebechtav, which is the visible Torah that's taken in with the eyes. Right? And it's mamish this way. Don't you see the beauty of it? Right, the Navi says what he saw. It doesn't always explain what it means. That's why we need the Mefarshim. We need Rashi, we need the Mitzudas, we need the Malbim. He sees this vision, this is what I saw. Oh, and the chariot, and thus, And we need the Mefarshim to get, tell us, what it means. Because the job of the Navi is just to tell us what he saw. Right? And so, therefore, and that's what gets written, what he saw. The function of the Torah Shebaal Peh, which is also the Mefarshim, Rashi and the Mitzvos is Torah Shebaal Peh. The commentary is to explain what it means. It's to explain. It's the Navi demonstrate. It was demonstrated to him, and he puts into visible writing just like he saw it. And it's the function of the Torah Shebaal to explain what it means, explain meaning. Now here's an amazing thing. This explains why. There's two, there's a big, seemingly difference in big yesodus in Amuna between what's in the Torah Shebechtav and what's in the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? How so, right? it's one concept that subdivides into two. The Chumash says, as per example, this, the parasha we just read, Pechukosai, Chumash says, if you do what God wants, you'll have it good. You do what God doesn't want, you'll have it bad, right? And B, it says also, right, that, if you have a good, so what does that mean? Oh, great crops, and great economy, right, et cetera, no taxes. Right? That's what the Chumash promises you, right? Torah Shebechtav. The Torah Shebaal Peh says two things about this. Right. First of all, it says Mapito Olam Haba, which is not mentioned in Torah Shebechtav. There are faint. We see Ramazim to it, but Ramazim is Torah Shebaal Peh. What they're explaining these. Torah Shebechtav doesn't really talk about Olam Haba openly. That was explained in Torah Shebaal Peh. The Chazal tells us, all the Schar and Olam Hazeh, what the Chumash promised you, that's not the real stuff. That's not the real Schar Mitzvah B'Hayal Malek, or the Gemara. The real Schar Mitzvah is not here. you know, don't, as it were, we'll explain this in a second, as it were, as if saying, don't be fooled by the Chumash, right? The real reward is a whole different place called Olam Haba. Chumash never spoke about Olam Haba. Right? Not only that, but the Torah Shebaal Peh tells us even more, and you shouldn't be doing your mitzvahs for Olam Haba, even Olam Haba, let alone what the Chumash promises you. You should be doing your mitzvahs l'shma, right? You only do it because God commanded, out of love of God, which is the reason that the tzdukim arose. They heard that they got ticked. Tzadok and Baisus were the Talmidim of Antignush Isocho that said in the Mishnah, Al Tiyu Lavarim Shazar Mnasakal Pras, right, don't serve God, forget reward. Don't do that. You should just serve him. Shalom Mnasakal Pras, right? Tzadok and Baisus were, they heard that they got ticked. I'm working for nothing? No way, right? So they, they dumped it. But they were willing to hold on to the Chumash, right? Because the Chumash sounds like, you have an agreement with God. You know, you work, you get. You know, they dumped the Torah Shebaal Peh, because that's, Tir Socho, the rabbis of the Torah Shebaal Peh were teaching this lesson of Lishma. They didn't want to hear it. Now, by the way, do we mention this? It's important to know that the Tzdukim didn't believe in the divinity of the Chumash either, but they needed something, so it shouldn't be a cultural vacuum. And one of the ways we know this happens to be from the sugya of Shavuos, right? From Shavuos itself, right? In the sugya of Sfiras HaOmer, the Tzdukim said that Omer should start from, literally, Mimachras HaShabbos, from Sunday, meaning after Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach, is when you should start. It should be Mimachras HaShabbos, literally. Shabbos not referring to Pesach, Shabbos Chol HaMoed. Right? So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai debated with them, and the Tzdukim said like this, I'll tell you why it has to be like us. Right? That you have to start counting from Shabbos Chol HaMoed. Right? For a year like this one. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu, loved the Jewish people. He wanted them to have a long weekend. Right? So, right, this is before Memorial Day and Labor Day and thus, right? So, this is, right? All right, so now we don't need a Torah anymore, right? But, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted the Jews to have a long weekend because he loved the Jewish people, right? So that's why, don't you get it? It has to start from, Motzei Shabbos. That way, when Shavuos comes, it'll be Shabbos Sunday every year. Now you'll have a long weekend, right? So that's it. So, I mean, they didn't believe God gave the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah. He loved the Jewish people. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai answered him back, if Moshe Rabbeinu loved us so much, why did he drag us around the desert for 40 years? All right. But the point is like this.
Why would he give us a 3-day Yom Tov?
Right. Right. They didn't believe in Chumash either, right? They thought Moshe wrote the Chumash. They didn't think it was from God, right? But they're willing to hold on to the Chumash because in the Chumash you don't have this lesson that they, this what was to them an abhorrent message that you work for nothing. Because that's in the Torah Shebaal Peh. You don't find that in the Torah Shebaal Saf. Right? So what's the answer? Why is there seemingly this contradiction, on the issue of schar va'onesh, between the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaal Peh? The Torah Shebichsav says, you do it and you get it, and you get it in Olam Hazeh, you don't get it in Olam Haba, and you do it and get it, and there's a contract here. And the Torah Shebaal Peh says, but everything in this world, that's nothing. It's all Olam Haba, and also you should do it amanas, out of love of God, l'shma. So the Maharal addressed it, says like this, because it's a difference in the nature of these two works, right? Torah Shebichsav tells you what you see, right? And you will see, right, year in and year out, if the Jewish people are good, they'll have a great year. If the Jewish people are bad, they'll have a bad year. And that's what you see. In the words of the Kuzri says like this, that's why the Chumash never spoke about Olam Haba. Now he puts a positive spin on it. And he said like this, Chumash never spoke about Olam Haba, because the Chumash wanted to, take up the challenge of, yes, this is factual. You'll be able to see it with your own eyes. Right? What does Christianity say? The Kuzri writes this. They say, if you believe in Yashka, or the Mazel say, if you blow yourself up, right, you go to heaven. Right? Now you understand, it's easy to promise a person heaven. Right? Because when he realizes he's been had, it's too late. He can't come back and warn anybody else. Right? The Kuzri says this. Right? So the Chumash took up the challenge that you could see with your own eyes that the Torah is true. The Chumash talks about what you could see. It's the visible Torah, parallel to what visible fact that you could observe. Fact. When, you know, when the Jewish people are good, they have great years. Even though that's not your real schar mitzvah. That your real schar mitzvah is olam haba. We don't do mitzvahs for olam hazeh. It's not worth it. Right? It's, you know, it's olam haba. But the Chumash is telling you what you're going to see. It doesn't talk to you about what you don't see. That's why olam haba is not mentioned in the Chumash, says the Maharal. No one ever saw it. Kol neviim lo nisnabu elo liyemos haMashiach olam haba ayin lo rasa olkim zuasecha. No one ever saw olam haba. Even neviim can't see it. It's too far away. It's out of the line of sight of prophecy. Torah shebichsav talks about what you see, and they're willing to take up a challenge. You will see with your own eyes that if you keep Torah, you'll have it good. Right? Doesn't mean that that's the real schar. It's just going to talk about what you're going to see. You're going to see this cause and effect with you. You will witness it. Right, we're not selling you a bill of goods. Doesn't mean that it should be that's the real schar mitzvah. Schar mitzvah is even bigger than that, right? But that bigger schar, no Navi can even see. It's out of line of sight. It remains in the realm of the conceptual. That's why it's in the Tarsh Baal. It's a concept. But also, the values, you know, even though it's true, if you do good, you get good, right? The values, you know, is that should that be your value? That's why you do it? No, you should do it l'shma. Right, but you know, the values that you have in your heart, that's explained in the Torah Shebaal Peh. Right? That's the Torah of the concept. Right? Inner meaning, you know. Values. Right? The Chumash is the raw fact, and then the Torah Shebaal Peh, right, is the concept and the explanation. And that's the relationship between these two Torahs. Right? Anyone who, you know, has learned Daf Gemara, we're doing Gemara after Derech Hashem. Right, the kidding. Maybe we'll get better attendance. But listen, the structure is that you know you start with a pasuk, and then you know the Tarsh Bapek cross references. Hey, this doesn't stim, and how do you reconcile it? You know that the Chumash is the raw data, right? And the Tarsh Bapek now is adding the explanation to this data. The Chumash is the facts, but the facts need to be explained and reconciled. And that's what the Tarsh Baal Peh does to the Tarsh Bechsav. So our core values or concepts that are beyond Nevuah, these things belong to the Tarsh Baal Peh. Right, but the Tarsh Bechsav is the raw, undeniable fact. But raw, undeniable fact lacks depth. The depth is in the explanation. Sometimes the problem is the explanation. That might be all fabricated. Right? But Baruch Hashem, we have an explanation that's from God Himself. So like I said, in heaven, it's all one Torah. And this is the amazing thing that we find by Matan Torah, that there's some interesting phenomenon, right, that everything was bedibur echad. God uttered one utterance. And yet, achas, the pasuk says, achas diber Elokim, shtayim zu shamati. God said one thing, I heard two different things. He said, zachar v'shamar bedibur echad. Right? Etc. And by him, every day, all the Torah Shebaal Peh, all the Torah Shebichsav, it's all one. It's all one dibur. It schisms, it fissions when it comes down to us. Shtayim zu shamati. I heard two different things. He said one thing. We hear two different things. Because the problem is us, right? The human situation is as such that what you see is not what you hear, and what you hear is not what you see. By God, it's all one. Right? It's all one Torah. But for the human situation, it has to, as it were, splinter into the visible and the invisible. Now this explains a very interesting thing. Right, the difference between the Bechtav and the Baal Peh, which is basically the essential difference between Jew and Goy. A very interesting thing, that the Goyim took the Bible from us. Mm-hmm. Right? They will take the Bible from us, right? And they weren't able to take the Torah Shebaal Peh from us. And that's really the, remains the difference between Jew and Goy, is that we interpret the Bible with the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Christians and the Muslims, they have the Bible, but they put their own explanations on it. Right? Mm-hmm. That what became the real difference between Jew and Goy, unfortunately, well, the whole Torah is meant for us, but unfortunately what became the difference between the two is in the Torah Shebaal Peh. God first saw this, and God says, you know, in Parshat Ksov L'chas Advari Ma'ela, write these things. You know, he's commanding him to write the Torah. But Ki Alpi Hadvar Ma'ela, it's on the word of these things, that Karati Tchabris, I make a covenant with you. So the Gemara says over there, Rashi brings it, Lo Nichrosa Bris El Advar Shebaal Peh, our Ikar covenant with God is in the Torah Shebaal Peh. So you know God commands, Ksov L'chas Advari Ma'ela, Ki Alpi Hadvar, but it's in the Alpe. Karati itcha bris ves Yisrael, because that remains the real eternal difference between Jew and Goy, is we have the Torah Shebaal Peh, and they don't. Because even though Chumash was meant for us, it was God always knew it was be able to be hijacked. And that's why already then, the Iker Brit between us and God is in the Torah Shebaal Peh. And this is an amazing thing. You know, they took the Chumash, they couldn't take the Torah Shebaal Peh. Because there's something about the Chumash that has to do with them. Because the Chumash is the visible Torah. Right? They live in the visible realm. So I'm going to give away a sneak preview to something I'm speaking about in the White Shul, you know, Shavuos night. They asked me to speak about miracles. That's my problem. I have to tie in miracles with Matan Torah. Fortunately, it wasn't much of a challenge. Right? The Leshem, Rav Yosha's grandfather, last of the great Lithuanian Kabbalists, the Leshem, says an amazing thing. You know, everything came from the Torah, right? Istaku bar esav bar alma. That also means that also the different modes of how God runs the world also comes from the Torah. Everything comes from the Torah, right? So there's nature and there's miracles. And everything comes from the Torah, correct? Right? You know where nature comes from? Comes from Torah Shebichsav. What's nature? What's science? And this is such an important point, right? What is science? Legitimate science. And this also explains the perceived conflict between Torah and science, which is not a conflict whatsoever, if science will just do its job only. Right? What's considered to be scientifically accurate, we said before, is what could be demonstrated in a microscope, in a telescope. Right? Raw fact. Raw visible fact. And, you know, take these readings. Now what the eye sees, you know, what the microscope sees, you know, is all, you know, dry fact. The apikorsis is when they start giving their explanations, right? If they would just give us the raw facts, you know, without any of their explanations, I'm sure we could attribute different explanations that would be perfectly reconcilable with the Torah. You know, the apikorsis is nothing, you know, the apikorsis is in their explanations, not in the raw data. If they would just do their job and give us the raw data, you know, I'm sure we'd be able to live with it just fine. Problem is they don't, you know, they give it to us as a package deal, and that's the problem.
That's always the way science is reported. People want to know what they feel that the scientists themselves have more of a handle on what it could possibly mean.
Right.
You know, when they see something, you know, they're always asked, is there a link? Is that, you know, why do you think is what you're seeing?
Yeah, so like we said, you know, in course of today's presentation, the whys, that's all in the mind, right? You know, their job, you know, as we're, what we'd accept as truth is what they see in a microscope and a telescope, and, you know, Am Yisrael's never denied raw facts. Never. Never. The Ramban writes, Mar Shiva Zichron Bar Yisrael, always tell us we never deny raw facts. But facts, we may reject their explanations. Facts we never reject. The Ramban in his Pirush on Chumash by the rainbow, by Noach, says like this, Anu al kocher no divrei vam, we are forced to agree with the Greeks that the rainbow is a perfectly natural phenomenon. You know, you can do it at home. You can make a rainbow at home. You have to do this, you know, mirror in the water and, you know, I'll explain afterwards how you can do this. Make a rainbow in your own house. It could be. It's natural. So what do you mean? It's natural that God created the rainbow. The rainbow always was since Shesh Yemei Bereishis. So the Ramban says, you know what? You know, after being that that's a fact, I'm going to relearn the pasuk. That's not the pshat. God created the rainbow then. He didn't create the rainbow then. He just designated the rainbow as an ois bris. The rainbow just got designated as being a sign. but always existed since creation itself. Huh? So you say to Ramban, you know, so I accept the fact, and therefore I'm going to reread the pasuk, you know, that it means that the rainbow was designated at that time to be an oispris. Before it was, it just wasn't designated. Right? We never deny raw facts. You know, chas v'shalom, you know, we're a wise nation. You know, our problem with the scientists is, you know, the apikorsis and their explanation. I'm sure if they would just stick to the raw data, it would be, I'm sure, ways that we could reconcile whatever they see, you know, with the Torah. All right, so and that's all rooted, the visible aspect of the universe, which you call Hanhogas HaTeva, the visible, it's rooted in Torah Shebichsav. So as it were, they live in the same dimensions as the written Torah, and that's why they could, as it were, hijack it. Right? Leshem says miracles are rooted in the Torah Shebaal Peh. There's no visible, you know, miracles not what we see day in, day out. We see nature. Miracles are, you know, from the invisible realm. That's why miracles are rooted in Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's why only Am Yisrael that has Torah Shebaal Peh. Miracles happen to us all the time. Miracles don't happen to other nations. Right? They have Teva. So they live, as it were, they live in the same realm as the written law. So you're able to steal it. They don't live in the same realm as the oral law. So it's not the fact that it wasn't in book form for them to go buy in Barnes and Nobles. But it's more than that. They don't live in the same dimension as Torah Shebaal Peh. So totally inaccessible. It's like they couldn't steal it even if they wanted to. And that's what makes Am Yisrael special. You know, we have the Torah Shebaal Peh and they don't. And because Torah Shebaal Peh, Be'etzem, you're talking about ideas. Ideas are invisible. Right? They're invisible. They belong to the dimension of ideas and not part of the physical three dimensions. And that's the Iker gift. You know, the amazing phenomenon of Matan Torah is not so much that we got a book, it's so much that we got the Torah Shebaal Peh. That's the bigger Pella. God put his mind into our mind. Put his ideas in our heads.
And all religions have their miracles. Christianity has their miracles.
Yeah, but those miracles don't really happen. They don't really happen, those miracles, you know. Yeah. They say they happen, you know, like the National Enquirer, you know, it's a giant frogman. They come every Sheni and Chamishi, you know. But the, you know, those miracles, they claim those miracles, but no one says those miracles actually happened, right? You seem displeased.
No, because there were witnesses that did see.
No, it says the book. We no one ever interviewed anybody, you know, that said, you know, was it, did you really walk away or was he water skiing at the time, right? No one was ever interviewed, right? They force people to accept the book that tells that story. There's no living testimony, right? You know, the Judaism is different than, you know, Am Yisrael themselves bear testimony to Mamad Har Sinai. This was a story that they sold, you know, to the European people. They sold this story. This was written. No one actually, we don't know anyone who actually saw it. We don't know any direct descendants of anyone who actually saw it. Right? But it's more than that. You know, the Maharal goes so far to say that a goy can't even see a miracle. You know, very interesting Maharal questions how to reconcile it with, some places in Tanakh.
Post Mamad Har Sinai?
What? Well, the Maharal's case in point, yes. Maharal's case in point happens to be post Mamad Har Sinai. Interesting. That's an interesting observation you made. Mm-hmm. All right. You know, so the Maharal says he wants to argue that that when the sun stood still for Yehoshua, only the Jewish people saw it. For the rest, and you know, for the rest of the world didn't lose a day. Right? He once claimed miracles, they happen from a different dimension, which is like parallel to the Torah Shebaal Peh, which is ours only. Miracles come from a different dimension than nature. Goyims live in the three dimensions of nature, and they only experience the natural. And when a miracle happens, it's transdimensional, and only people who have a connection to that other dimension experience the miracle, and that's Am Yisrael. He's open to the idea that someone in direct contact with the Jewish people at the time, will, because he's in contact with the Jew, may experience the miracle, but he's very adamant that when the sun stood still for Yehoshua, for the rest of the world, sun went around the earth, you know, regularly. No one experienced the loss of a day.
Same thing being at Korea Siamsa because there is absolutely no proof. The scientists say there is no proof that the sea parted. So is that because we are the only ones who saw it and they did not?
Seemingly. But, you know, like I said,
this is post-fact, though. That Chris Amsov would have been prior to this. We only got the Torah after Chris Amsov. Saying this is a post.
Yeah, I mean, the question whether, I'm just saying, you know, this moral needs to be reconciled because, you know, as like she pointed out, it says, Rosh says, all the waters in the world split for a second. All right, so the question, what is the difference between the miracles before Matan Torah and after Matan Torah, or, you know. But Rav Moshe Shapiro told us in Shir, you know, the Maharal is very preoccupied. He has like 20 pages on the issue of the sun standing still for Yehoshua, that he's very adamant no one else saw it. You know, what was his he was like preoccupied with that. It's 20 pages on the Gevurah Hashem. So he told us in Shir that in the days of the Maharal, the big argument of the church of why Shabbos has to be on Sunday is because the world lost a day with Yehoshua, right? Sun stood still, you know, so we're a day behind, you know, we're running out, so we have to push ahead a day. That was the big argument. That was what was like the rage of the time, and the Maharal had to participate in debates with priests. That was like the big thing he was dealing with. So the Maharal's retort at the debates was, I don't believe that story. I don't believe the sun stood still. I don't believe that. But you're a rabbi. How can you say that? So, well, that's the point. Right? It only says so in the Bible. It doesn't say so in the history books. Right? That's the point. Right? So it shows that, being historically, the sun went around the earth regularly. Only the Jewish people who have the Bible, you know, had that event. All right. So the Goyim live in the dimension that the three dimensions of the visible world. So they have a connection, you know, not a real one, but they have a pseudo-connection to the visible Torah, which is the shoresh of the whole Hanhaga of Teva, which is the revealed Hanhaga, revealed mode that we can see. Right? You know, and, you know, the Torah Shebaal Peh, which belongs to the ideas of Torah, comes to the dimension of ideas, the invisible, which, and from there comes miracles. Right? That's only for the Jewish people. Right. Now, this also explains another phenomenon. You know, there might be plenty of psychological explanations for this also. Right? But some, you know, when working in Kiruv, right, there's, for some reason, people are quicker to accept the Torah Shebichsav. And, you know, it takes more convincing to get them to accept the Torah Shebaal Peh. And you understand there's no logical basis for any delineation, because the same great people that told you this is God's book are the same great people that told you that God also gave along with it this book of how to explain and decode it. Right? But still, you know, working out, it works. You know, people will go for the Bible sooner, right, than they go for the Torah Shebaal. Like I said, you know, you know, if you trust the people that handed down the Bible, if you trust them on the Bechtav, why don't you trust them on the Baal Peh? The same great people, same transmission.
Broken telephone.
Why broken telephone? Same people that you're going to trust. You know, that this is God's book, those are the same people. It's the same Mesorah, right? The same people that come to you and tell you, this is the book, and this is how you read it. This is Aleph, this is Beis, this is Gimel. The same people teach you how to read the book are also the people that tell you, and together with the book came this explanation. Right, it's based on the same testimony.
But the Goyim believe in Torah Shebichsav as well.
Right. Exactly. So we could explain this psychologically, because the Bible made more inroads in the global context. But it metaphysically, it belongs to this idea, because the Bible is the visible Torah. It's more manifest. You know, Torah Shebaal Peh has more ideas. It's invisible. You know, it takes a while to tap in. It's physically manifest. It's visible. That's why. I mean, that's why the Goyim grabbed onto it, and that's why it's just more tangible to people. That's the difference in nature between the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaal Peh. Right? But like I said, this schism is mitzidenu, you know, this human situation, because the eyes are not the ears and the ears are not the eyes, you know, and that's why for us, you know, Torah is twins. That's why the Mazel of Sivan, you know, Ta'omim, right? But, you know, but by God, it's all one. The difference between Bechtav and Baal Peh is from our perspective. But by God, it's all one, right? It's splintered into a Bechtav and Baal Peh because of the human situation. That, you know, is a relation between the demonstration and the explanation, for like we explained. Okay? And it was very important, you know, for God to make it clear to us at Ma'amar HaSinai, this is all one Torah in essence. It's all one Torah in essence. And, you know, the Torah Shebechtav in essence has all the depth of the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? And the Torah Shebaal Peh is objective truth, no less than the Torah Shebechtav. And that's what it means, that it was all in one sound. But more than that, there was a sensory crossover. They could see sound and they could hear sight. Niflamot, the lesson teaching you, right? See sound, that the explanations of the Torah Shebaal Peh are factual. It's not conjecture. The problem with explanation is that it all might be imagination, right? It's, you could see this sound. Ro'im esakos, you could see the sound. You could see that this is, you know, this is not conjecture, this is not made up, this is not contrived. You could see it, it's factual. It's as factual as any raw thing that you could see. And you could hear sight, right? That they're able, that everything that we call Torah Shebechtav with the Psukim, they've been able to perceive all the depth. Right? So because sort of a function of sensory crossover, right, is that it was all, and that's what it also means, bedibur echad, to know that it's all one Torah, and it splinters only because of the human situation. It's all one Torah, but it's also all one Torah with, you know, all of the shlemus of the two aspects are, you know, shared. So you could hear sight, i.e. see the depth, perceive the depth in the objective fact that generally the eyes only see as superficial, and but more importantly, Royim Esakos, that's the main point, that the Kolos, the Torah Shebaal Peh, see, it's factual, there's not conjecture, there's not made up, able to see that it's all Teras Emes, Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mipi HaGvura Mamish. This is what we want to explain.